Michigan's dead. Michigan rules, Ohio State drools, or is it the other way around?
Michigan drools.
Okay.
Michigan drools.
This year, Ohio State rules, Michigan drools. All right, we're back.
All right, heart of the rivalry. Okay.
Victory Monday for the Browns. Oh, wait, never mind.
Thank God it's a college football show.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, welcome back to the heart of the rivalry. We are on episode 2. We are in college football week 2. Is that right? Is it week 2? Because it goes week zero, week one, week two.
Yeah.
We are week 2 review. I am your host, Philip Kaplan, in the inimitable David Briggs.
And not in the good way.
College football, college football exists within the weather system of David Briggs. How are you doing?
Good, Phil. How awesome of a weekend was that? I mean, it is fascinating. I got my foam finger here, Mud Hens. If you look at the broader narrative in college football, you know, the MAC was supposed to become the minor leagues. Toledo Rockets were going to become the Toledo Mud Hens. The Buffalo Bulls were going to become the Buffalo Bisons. And as I wrote today, you know, the little old MAC was just going to become a minor league pipeline feeding the big schools with the money and the deeper pockets and the tradition. But, that's fair. I mean, with the transfer portal in the NIL era, I mean, they were supposed to just get ransacked, and in a way they have. But this week reminded that there's a hell of a lot of good football still in the MAC, a hell of a lot of pride, and BG and Northern Illinois were the latest to kind of just show that. I mean, Northern Illinois, wow. I mean, going into
top five upset of all time? Does this displace App State in Michigan?
No. That's FCS. Come on, let's not get carried away.
Okay, this is the big house, though.
First top five win by a MAC team. Yeah, first ever top five win for a MAC team. And there have been, pretty good for the MAC. There have been bigger days in MAC history. I think September 20th, 2003 will always be the gold standard. Just a completely insane day for MAC football.
That was when UT beat Michigan?
That was when UT beat number 9 Pittsburgh.
Oh.
Defended the Glass Bowl. Field storming. Marshall beat number 6. Kansas State, so 2 top 10 wins, and maybe the biggest one of them all, just by name brand, Northern Illinois, the Huskies, go down to Tuscaloosa and beat a top 25 Alabama team. So 3 top 25 wins, 2 top 10 wins, hard to ever beat that. But this is not bad. This might be the biggest win in MAC history, going into South Bend, beating a top 5 Notre Dame team, and then BG. Very competitive loss.
Very
competitive. That was fascinating. Following along in the Michigan press box. I mean, what? They put 280. They just completely, looked vice versa. It looked like BG was the Big Ten team. Penn State.
Can't even remember.
No, I mean, it's just run of the mill. Kind of a little cowtown school. Yeah, I mean, MAC school. But BG just has their way in the first half. 24 points. And for context, last year, nobody scored more than 24 points in an entire game on Penn State. BG had its way. So that just says a lot about the quality of football at the top of the MAC. And another big opportunity this weekend in Starkville, Mississippi for Toledo. Kyle Rowland and I will be there. Not quite the same caliber of opponent. Mississippi State might be the worst team in the SEC.
But they're still in the SEC.
They still are in the SEC. You get the name brand. I think they were picked 15th out of 16 in the SEC before the season. Vanderbilt has since beaten Virginia Tech. So Mississippi State might drop into that 16 spot. But you're absolutely right. Still a name brand team. Name brand win if Toledo is fortunate enough to get it. So it'll be fascinating.
Let me ask you. NIU did it. What kept BGSU from winning? What do you think it could have done? What bounce could have happened where they would get over the hump to have beaten Penn State?
Well, I should be clear that it wasn't able to watch the game.
Oh, yeah, completely. But you reviewed it as in your professional context.
Reviewed it, and it was certainly following along. I don't know that they didn't do anything to win the game. It kind of reminds me of Charlie Coles when he took Miami, Ohio to Kentucky against Calipari's guy, 10 guys going to the NBA, and somebody asked him, like, how did you let the game slip away? Like, the game slip away? Like, we're playing freaking Kentucky. Like, we didn't let the game slip away. It's like, how were they close with us? Why is nobody asking Calipari? Like, so why aren't you asking me, why was Penn State keeping BG in the game? So, I mean, I don't know if BG did anything wrong. I mean, certainly they, you know, maybe you know, ran out of ammo and wore down. They don't have the same level of depth as a Big Ten school, but it's more of a credit to BG than anything else. And with NIU, I mean, there's a reason why there hasn't been a top five upset before. I think Max had 50 plus opportunities against top five teams. You know, there's just a completely different level of talent. So I think, you know, Penn State made some adjustments. BG's with a lot of its without a lot of its top players.
Still tight in the second half, though.
Including Terry and Stewart. Yeah. And they are within one possession most of the second half. So a play here, a play there. If you get a pick six, or if they get a great play on explosive play on offense, could have gone the other way. So just a credit to BG. And I think it shows that BG in Northern Illinois will be right up there with Toledo and Miami this year, if not above.
So from the highest of the highs to the almost of the almosts, we'll go to the bottom. What did you see up in the Big House?
Well, I mean, other than Michigan not being able to run, throw, pass, block, defend, everything went pretty well. Great scene and 111,000.
Okay,
plus.
So just a few check, a few boxes just, you know, to check.
Just make just the improvements between week two and three. Everything will be fine.
It was a tough watch.
It was. Unless you're a fan of the rest of the Big Ten or Ohio State, was it really tough for you?
Well, you got, like I say, I come from a mixed household, yeah. You know, so I got Michigan fans. I'm an Ohio State grad, but I had family that had come up to go to that game. So I was hoping they could see a game. And
I mean, they did see a football game.
They did see a football game by one team. The floodgates opened in the second quarter. And my little cousin actually said to me, I was like, it was just, I had a couple tough breaks in the second. He goes, no. If they played that game 100 times, yeah. Michigan does not win any of them.
No.
They're in a fall off.
Yeah, I just kind of saw it as a return to reality. I think there was a sense, and you know, maybe rightfully so. You know, you're on top of the world for 3 years, and you kind of think the culture will just keep rolling. But just kind of a return to reality. I mean, you lose pretty much everything that made that Michigan championship operation go. I mean, 13 draft picks, a million starters, most of your coaches, including Jim Harbaugh. And I have to remind people, I mean, Jim Harbaugh was kind of the singular force that made them go. It's not like you just bring in one of his assistants and it'll just keep rolling. I mean, the secret sauce of Jim Harbaugh was, I mean, a lot of Ohio State fans will say it's cheating, but the secret sauce was that if you look at his recruiting classes, the last two were 16th and 17th nationally. So good, but not great. You're not handing a plug and play Alabama or Ohio State or Georgia or just five stars are falling out of the sky and the next coach can just, you know, plug all these guys in and just keep rolling. The secret with Jim Harbaugh was identifying the right guys and just kind of forging them in his iron-willed image. And when you lose that and you lose all the top players and you lose the top coaches and your sign-stealing expert, this is what you're going to get. I mean, it's a natural transition. I mean, even when Jim Harbaugh lost this much talent, they went 8-4 in the regular season in 2017. And this is with a completely new everything, a rookie coach. So it's hard to really read anything into it. Jim Harbaugh's program is gone. We'll see if Sharon Moore can build his own program. But for now, it's just a really bad day against a really good team by a program in transition. So
Ohio State looking crisp against Western Michigan.
Absolutely. That was yeah, that's what you get when Ohio State's not going to take Western Michigan lightly. Western Michigan was leading Wisconsin in the fourth quarter last week. So
Maction.
Ohio State, again, a credit to Maction. And Ohio State looked very uneven in week one. So this was just kind of a team, kind of reminds me of what Ryan Day said when they played Toledo a couple years ago. And they had been uneven to start the season. And he said, tonight, the message is to dominate. You know, the standard is the standard. And doesn't matter the opponent, we're just going to come out and dominate.
All right, we're calling this the halftime segment of the show. So we trot out the bands, we go off field, we enjoy the regalia of college football. Briggs, I understand you got a top five list for us. Is that right?
Well, we're going hitting the road. Kyle Rowland and I, again, going to Starkville, Mississippi this week. One of my first forays into SEC territory, which should be fun. I guess I've been to some of the new SEC schools. I covered University of Missouri and the Big 12 for a number of years, and been to Oklahoma and some of the Texas, some of the former Big 12 schools that are now in the SEC. But this is my first true SEC road trip. Just throw out the top five stadiums I have been to.
Number five.
All right, we're going reverse order.
That's right.
All right, let's. I'm going to throw Michigan Stadium and Notre Dame Stadium in the same boat. They're very similar stadiums. They've got the they've got the bowls. They're awesome stadiums that you can just feel the history in the place. Awesome scenes.
Fan bases that think their team is the most important thing in the universe, which that's matters.
True, but just when you go to Notre Dame or Michigan, it just says college football, and just I put them together because the architecture of the stadiums is similar and they're equally awesome.
Number four.
Camp Randall Stadium in Madison, Wisconsin, home of the Badgers. Just an incredible tailgate scene. Awesome. One of the best, maybe my favorite Big Ten town, capital of Wisconsin. Incredible tailgate scene. Everything you would imagine in a Wisconsin
sausage, party, cheese, sausage, maybe kielbasa, some beers.
Maybe a few beers or 20. And then the scene inside is just as awesome. Been to a couple night games there, and it doesn't really get any better. This, the scene after the third quarter people talk about, but jump around. I've never felt a stadium quake quite as much. They say it's structurally sound, but when you're in the press box and the TVs are swaying, it feels like the whole thing is about to come down. So incredible.
Number three
has to be Happy Valley and State College, which our friend Michael Burwell, BG beat writer, was just there. And I asked him, how do you like that old school press box? A lot of the stadium is new, but I don't think this press box has been touched since like 1957. There's all these bizarre just kind of nooks and crannies, and there's just one bathroom in the press box with one toilet for like 300 people. It looks like it's but awesome scene. Looks like an erector set on the outside. Awesome scene on the inside. You're right in between all the mountains. Just what college football should be, and doesn't get any bigger than those whiteout nights in State College.
Oh, I've unfortunately seen some tough losses there. Number two.
Right. Not necessarily the second best atmosphere. I put Wisconsin and Penn State above it, but
stadium-wise,
Ohio Stadium. Architecturally, is there a better stadium in college football? I mean, there might be better scenes, but just the double-decked horseshoe.
The shoe is a great nickname.
Yeah, well, Michigan Stadium and Notre Dame Stadium are great, but they don't have the same intimidating feel as you're driving up. You know, Michigan Stadium is built into the ground. It feels like you could almost jump up from the outside and touch the top row of the big house. You drive up to Ohio Stadium, you're craning your neck, looking up at like that. This looks like this gladiatorial,
Does look like a gladiator
it's
arena.
It's the ultimate ode to the excess of our great pastime. It's just an incredible structure.
30 years ago now that they retrofitted it to add the newer structures. But I think they did a great job. Yeah. Really phenomenal.
Still looks great on the outside. I've always said, just architecturally speaking, and the way that horseshoe keeps the noise in, the Scarlet Canyon, that's got to be number two.
The Scarlet Canyon. Briggs says there's got to be one better, so there must be one better. Number one,
it's hard to beat the Rose Bowl. I mean, I've been able to go to all the big bowl games and a lot of the cool places in sports, like, you know, Augusta National or Fenway Park or Yankee Stadium or Indianapolis Motor Speedway, all the cool places, but that said, hard to beat the Rose Bowl. I mean, it's kind of reminds me a little bit of Michigan Stadium and Notre Dame Stadium, just in the bowl setting. Although Michigan Stadium's not a bowl, but you know what I mean.
What do you mean it's not a bowl?
Well, it's kind of a bowl, but it's got the rectangle. It's Michigan Stadium is perfectly built. Like the sight lines are great. Everyone's right on there. It's not the bowl where like the sidelines are way away from the field.
Yeah, okay.
So architecturally, great job. But so it's got that kind of that bowl feel. But with the mountains, the sunset,
the sunset.
I mean, you can't. I hear people saying, I mean, the Rose Bowl is kind of fuddy-duddy, stuck in the past, and they have gotten in the way of playoff progress by insisting that their game stays at, I guess, 5 o'clock, because the sunset has to, or 5 o'clock Eastern time, the sunset has to set at the end of the third quarter.
It does make for good TV, David.
Yeah, it's perfect. I mean, remember when they moved the Rose Bowl to, I think, Dallas during COVID? I mean, come on. I mean, it might be the Rose Bowl, but it's not. So. I said the bucket list, if you can put another stadium on the bucket list, it has to be the Rose Bowl. I mean, it's just, you've all seen it on TV. You know what I'm talking about.
You've seen it on the TV. Yeah. Well, this is a college football show, so I know that's why you left out the Muni lot.
Yeah, Muni lot in the pit. That's going to be sad when the Browns move to Brook Park.
Oh my God, this is a different show. Welcome back to the Scouting Report segment of Heart of the Rivalry, where we look forward to what all our teams will be doing BG has a bye, so, you know, no win, no loss there. David, what is the most important game in the remaining three schools?
Oh, well, I'll be there, which will be fun. Mississippi State hosting the Rockets of the University of Toledo. We talked about Rockets catching them with a good bit of timing in terms of Mississippi State being in transition. First-year coach picked 15th out of 16 in the SEC. Also catching them a good bit of timing in that they played a late game at Arizona State on Saturday night and didn't land in Columbus, Mississippi, which is about a half hour outside of Starkville, until after 6 a.m. Sunday morning. So probably didn't get to bed till 9 or 10 a.m. On Sunday. That throws out your day. Toledo's already preparing, so keep an eye out for that as well. But the biggest thing to watch is Toledo's defensive line, which is probably the best in the MAC, one of the best in the country, actually. I mean, if you look at the way Phil Steele and some of these other football gurus have rated it, some NFL talent on there against an inexperienced Mississippi State offensive line. If you look at these big MAC upsets, if you look at how Toledo almost beat Notre Dame a couple of years ago, it's by dominating up front. These SEC schools have more talent on the perimeters and the edges, and, you know, more playmakers and more recruits, but I think Toledo can dominate up front on the defensive line, and if they can do that, they'll be right in there, if not winning the game. This is a very winnable game.
It is. Maction again, yeah. Winnable. Have these two schools ever played?
I do not believe so. Certainly not in the past 245 years, but I'm trying to think. I don't believe so. That's a good question. I should have researched that beforehand, but I certainly can't recall.
We'll have the producers look it up in post. We'll put it up on the board. Yeah. Okay, so after that, where does Ohio State, what's Ohio State doing?
What are they hosting? Marshall? Again, it's just kind of just like with Western Michigan. You know, the standard is your own standard. It's obviously not going to be a close game, because I shouldn't say that after some of the games last weekend, but it's just can you take the next step? Can this offensive line, which is probably the weak link in this team.
The biggest question mark.
Can they continue to take steps forward, which I thought they did against Western Michigan? Can Will Howard continue to find a groove with his receivers? Just as long as you win 77-0, I think everything will be just fine.
Just fine. 77 yeah. Zip. Okay, and finally, Michigan looks to get back on their feet against Arkansas State. What are your thoughts?
That's, again, a game that Michigan should roll. I think the biggest key for them is just figuring out their quarterback situation. It's still kind of unconscionable to me that a team with such high ambitions as Michigan could go into the season with such a glaring need at quarterback. If they had gone into the portal and grabbed a veteran transfer, maybe that guy could be dynamic enough to kind of offset all the issues around them. And I'm not saying quarterback's the only issue of Michigan. The defense was terrible on Saturday, and the rest of the offense was terrible too. But again, other than that,
and the kicking game and the special teams,
right. But I mean, to go in with a former walk-on, incredible story, but a former walk-on as your starter and Alex Orji as your, it's just, I don't know. You can believe in those guys, but to not even bring in somebody to push them is crazy to me.
Okay, this has been the Heart of the Rivalry, Week 2. He's David Briggs. I'm Phil Kaplan. We'll see you next week.